Welcome to Built to Go, a van life podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Wagg, coming to you from the College of Curiosity. This time it's episode 272, and we're going to talk about my truck. Yes, but there's a reason, I promise. But yeah, we're going to talk about my truck. We're also going to talk about propane lockers and how they can save your life, a product review of a supermarket, and a place to visit where something used to be and something ain't no mo'. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. Thank you for joining me once again for episode 272. That's one of those palindromic kind of symmetrical numbers that feels like it should mean something, but I don't know if it does. Before we get started, though, a fine person from the land of NZ, that would be New Zealand for all you Americans, brought up something that I totally missed last week when I was talking about sound in your van, or trying to eliminate sound from your van. One of the most annoying and problematic types of sound you'll encounter in your van is the sound of your build. All the squeaks and lumps and rattles and bing bong bing and all this stuff that happens, that's a real problem, and I'm amazed that it didn't even cross my mind when I was working on that piece to address that. So just really briefly, yes, this is a big issue, and it's a thing that's hard to plan for, because while you're building your van, typically your van's not going anywhere, and you don't even think about it. And then you head down the road, and suddenly you hear, and yeah, it's really annoying. In my van, my Sprinter van, I had a squeak the whole time that was behind the partition and in the cabinets, and I never found it, and I could never get to it, so I just kind of turned the radio up. Somebody actually suggested that Built to Go is a solution for squeaks in your van. If you turn the volume high enough, my dulcet tones will drown out any squeak you might have. But in all seriousness, squeaks are actually bad. I mean, yes, they're annoying, but that sound is friction. That's what you're hearing. You're hearing things rubbing together, like my hands. That creates heat, which you're not worried about the heat, but what it does is it makes things wear out. And that means you've got something rubbing on something else, and that rubbing is eating away at one of those things. And that can be bad. So what should you do? Well, it's tricky. I mean, even the best built RVs in the world will have this problem because it's not engineered like a car. We have wood and things at right angles with screws that loosen up and the temperature variance. Basically, you're always going to have this problem. But if you can mitigate it, do. And if you've got something simple like a cabinet's rubbing against the wall, you can put a piece of tape in between them or maybe a little bit of foam or something like that. But you should take the time to try to eliminate any build noise, because almost all of it means something bad is happening. And over time, it can actually cause serious problems. It is amazing how a little tiny bit of friction multiplied over a week on the road can lead to real damage. So thank you, Repro. I just wanted to mention that I don't have any great solutions for the problem holistically, but in general, yes, you should worry about that, and yes, you should try to do something about it. Now, why do I want to talk about my truck? Well, it has been a pretty eventful week here in Chicagoland and other places. I need to back up a step here and explain how messed up my summer has been in regards to van life. So I had surgery in January that laid me up for a good couple months. Because of that surgery, I couldn't get down to Tiki Bago Land, my little piece of property on the river in north central Illinois, to start my van. So my 2011 Sprinter ambulance, which is converted into a camper van, lives down there. And typically what I'll do is in the winter, I'll go down every couple of weeks and start it, let it run up to temperature, you know, just kind of keep it loose and ready to go. I wasn't able to do that because I couldn't even walk, never mind drive. By the time I did get down there, it was the end of March. And ironically, I forgot my keys. So another couple weeks, I finally got down there in April, and I started the van, started right up, and then nightmare. All these error codes and messages and all this stuff, and I'll skip the whole story, but I am abandoning the van. not literally, but it will not be my camper van anymore. And so this summer has been basically me trying to deal with that fact and exactly what am I going to do. Now, I am not going to get another van. I decided that. I have a pickup truck. I have a 2019 Ram 1500 Classic SLT trim pickup truck. This has an 8-foot bed and two doors. It's kind of like an old-fashioned looking pickup truck and fairly unusual these days. It's four-wheel drive. It's got a Hemi in it. And it's been a completely perfectly fine truck. So that's going to be my new rig. But the question is, how? And I've had two and now three different plans. My first plan was that I would get a shell off of Facebook Marketplace, which I did, just a camper shell that fits on the top of the bed rails in the back, and then do a no-build in that and try that out. And I did do that, although I actually never went camping in it. I got the topper and put it on there, and it's lived on there a while now, and that was all fine. But then I had an opportunity to get a truck camper. A truck camper would be also known as a slide-in. This is an actually factory-built RV that just you back your truck up under it and lower it down and drive off with it. Well, the one I got was a great deal. It's a 2021 Travelite 670W, I think is the model, because it was severely water damaged. And I got it for probably less than half price, the more I think about it. But I knew I had to replace some of the boards that go under the bench seats, to make it simple. So that's fine. So I started that project, removed the boards, and I had to go away for a week. I came back, and a family of Carolina wrens had taken up residence in the camper. They flew in through the bottom. Now, I did have those covered up, so that couldn't happen. But then one week when I was working on it, I figured I'll just be back in a few days. I don't have to worry about covering it up. And yeah, well, the wrens took advantage of that. So that meant I couldn't do any work on it. My wife was afraid I was going to drive the wrens away so they'd abandon the nest, which is a real concern. It is actually illegal to remove the nest. And honestly, I didn't want to. I like nature. I'm happy to have the wrens, you know, reproduce in my van, so to speak. So then what? Now, I have a camping trip planned in September, in next week, basically. That is an anchor for me. That trip is important. Yes, I could not go, right? It's not a one-time event. It's the type of thing that happens a few times a year. I can absolutely push it off and not go. But I want to go, and I want to see the folks that I normally see there. And I need to go. I need to have a trip planned so that I can continue this lifestyle, because with everything else going on in my life, it's easy to push this stuff aside. So I was stuck with all my plans being wrapped up in that truck camper, and suddenly I can't do that. Now what? And it was frustrating because I have a fully built-out camper van that doesn't run. I have the Tiki Bago, the 72 Winnebago, that's ready to go, except it doesn't run. I have the 26-foot Airstream, which is total luxury, and I could tow it out there, but where this camp is fairly remote, and the roads are kind of rough, and I don't want to risk the Airstream on it, honestly. The last time I was there, some folks brought in an Airstream, and they totally regretted it, so not going to do that. And then, what have I got? I've got the shell. I'm like, okay, so I started doing some earnest work into turning the shell into kind of a no-build camping rig, because I also need to use my truck as a truck. Anyway, and then I realized that long-term, the ultimate solution to my issue, where I live in Chicago and I have a narrow parking space, so I can't have anything hanging off the sides of the truck, meaning my truck camper can't live on my rig full time. I have to remove it and take it off, even if I could get into it. I realize what I need is something like a Project M topper, or one of these toppers that fits on the back of your truck, has plenty of space, but doesn't extend beyond the body. And they're weirdly expensive. Like, the Project M by Four Wheel Campers is a great off-road rig. It fits on top of the rails of your pickup truck, and then it has a pop-up, and it's actually super comfortable in there, but it doesn't extend beyond the truck. So any place you can normally take your pickup truck, you can take it with this on there. But they're like $18,000 new, and I am not going to spend that. So I decided what I was going to do is I was going to continue with the plan to build out the shell, and then I was going to look for what I have been calling a space cap. This is an all-in-one fiberglass unit that fits in the back of the pickup truck. It's also called a utility body, although that's not technically correct because you're not replacing the bed. The point of these things is they're all one unit. They have a floor. So they have that like a truck camper does, but they also don't extend beyond the sides of the truck the way a cap does. It's kind of the best of both worlds. One way to think of it is it's like a scamp trailer that just fits in the back of your truck. Now, I had thought I would do this next year. And these things are also crazy expensive, and they don't come up used very often. But I've got a little bit of a Facebook Marketplace addiction now. Whenever I go onto Facebook, I always look at Marketplace and just see what crazy stuff's being sold. And I saw one, and it was perfect. It was really exactly what I wanted, and it was only $500. And it was within striking distance. It wasn't close. It was in Bay City, Michigan, which if you look at a map, is about 6 hours from me. So I thought about it. I was like, nope, I'm going for it. So I drove all the way out there last week and got the thing. And now it's sitting on my truck. And that is going to be my future camping rig. I am basically going to empty out my van and install everything that is in my van now into the shell. Not everything, just stuff that makes sense. Obviously, this is going to be a little bit of a smaller rig. I'm not able to stand up in it. It's about 58 inches tall inside, which is pretty good. But I can't stand up in it. My wife can, actually, or just about. And then I'm going to have the best of all possible worlds. Remember, I've said many times that all this van life, vehicle dwelling stuff we're talking about is all about compromise. You can't have everything. You can only have some things. But what I am about to do here is interesting compromises on many levels. But as far as being able to do things, being able to do whatever I want, this is going to be a pretty optimal rig. It'll be in a four-wheel drive truck that, while it's not lifted or anything, and I've got normal tires on it, it's still pretty handy. I mean, I can get down most off-road trails without too much trouble. It's a very tall truck. I've got a good amount of clearance from the ground, just stock. And I can remove it from the truck pretty quickly, so I can then use it as a truck, which is awesome. I can tow a trailer with the truck, which is great. And as a daily driver, the truck is fine. I mean, it's obviously big for a city like Chicago. But here's the thing that blows my mind. So I got a tonneau cover for it, just a fairly inexpensive vinyl tonneau cover. It just covers the bed. And when I was driving to pick up the cap, the new cap, which is a cargo body brand, they're out of business now, I thought, let's just see what this truck does normal. Like, I'm going to have a normal drive, and I drove from Oglesby, Illinois, to Casco, Michigan. And I took very careful notes on the gas mileage. Now, this is a big truck. It's only a 1500, but it's a full-size 1500. And it has a 5.7-liter Hemi V8 in it. A big engine. It's a small block, but it's still a big engine. What did you think I would get for gas mileage in something like that? Now, in my experience, pickup trucks are good for 13, 14 miles a gallon, typically. No, I got... And I have pictures to prove this. I got 24.3 miles per gallon in a pickup truck, a big one. Now, it's somewhat of an optimal route. It's fairly flat. There aren't very many hills. It was all highway driving, of course, and there wasn't very much wind. Well, on the way up, there wasn't much wind. Coming back, there was a whole lot. And I'm just like, that is better than the mileage I got in my little NV200. And it's far better than the mileage I got in my Sprinter van, which ran on diesel, which right now costs about 75 cents per gallon more, not to mention the DEF and everything. So after I'm done building this thing out, I'm going to be in much better shape than I was in the Sprinter ambulance. And then my plan for the Sprinter is I am done with the thing. I'm not putting any more work into it. And yes, it could be repaired to be operational again. I have no doubt. It needs some parts repaired. It may need new valve body, which is a fairly labor-intensive thing. But it could totally be repaired. The body is in perfect shape. Suspension's in perfect shape. There's no rust. But even if I did all that, I still couldn't trust it, and it still wouldn't be worth anything. 2011 Sprinter vans just aren't worth anything, and I would actually, I mean, essentially the vehicle is totaled because of the repairs that need to be done. Now, I hope this will end up in the hands of some handy person who can do all these repairs themselves and have themselves a nice van, but it isn't going to be built out anymore. I'm going to take almost everything out of it, and I'm going to donate it to, I'm not sure yet, Habitat for Humanity is the leading candidate right now, but hey, if you have an idea of where I should donate it, feel free to drop me a line at jeff@builttogo.com. That's two T's, not three, not one. Okay, now let's talk some more about the truck. A truck is not a van. And I have always said, you know, van life is not about being in a van. It's about, you know, being on the road, you know, and I stand by that. But it is interesting having a truck. I don't have a favorite brand or anything. And if I were anything for pickup trucks, I would have said I'm a Ford guy, although I would much rather have a Toyota. And as far as appearances, I actually like the way the Nissans look the best. I have no affinity for Dodge or Ram whatsoever. In fact, the very first Dodge engine that I've ever owned was in the Winnebago, which has a Dodge 413 in it. So the reason I bought that truck was because of the gas mileage, the reliability, and the price. Those three things. And after doing the research at the time I bought the truck last year, it was the best truck to buy. And so far, the thing has been flawless. I haven't had to do any work on it at all. It's about 30,000 miles on it. It has some rust issues, which I'm disappointed in. It's nothing terrible, but I can see a little bits of rust forming in the wheel arches and on the bumper. I don't know why my Sprinter has absolutely zero rust, and this truck has rust, and it's 8 years newer, and it's been in the same environment. There's something about the way they're built that American pickup trucks just rust faster, and I don't really understand why, but I'm going to fix all the rest. That said, it has been a great vehicle, and I am starting to love it. There's really nothing about it that I like. I feel kind of like an imposter when I'm driving it, because it is, you know, your vehicle is an extension of you, and this big white pickup truck, that it just doesn't feel like me. I very rarely have driven American-made vehicles. I did have a Ford F-150 for a few years. That was fine. But I remember when I left the Ford F-150 and went back into a Land Rover, of all things, it felt like coming home. There's something about me and my personality that likes European and Japanese vehicles more than American-made vehicles. And I'm not entirely sure what that is. It's the vehicle. It's not just some bias against the U.S. or whatever. It's the way the vehicle's built, the ergonomics of it, just don't match me. But that said, this truck has been amazing. So if you're somebody who is thinking about doing some vehicle life and you're really unsure of what you want to do, let me make the case for getting a pickup truck. If you don't know what you're going to end up doing, a pickup truck offers you the best flexibility of all the possible vehicles you can have. They have a decent tow capacity, so you can tow a trailer. They can take a truck camper, which you can just put on the back. You can put a shell on them and use it as a no-build. You can remove the shell and then just have it be an empty truck. And a factor that is often overlooked, it is very easy to sell a pickup truck. Pickup trucks are always in demand, and they are easy to sell. Somebody will buy your pickup truck. Vans are actually much harder. SUVs are as well, especially because today a car and an SUV are almost the same thing. Here I am, what, 5 years since I started this project? And I find myself thinking a truck is actually an excellent solution for all the problems we encounter. And I have to say, 2019 Ram 1500 Classic, pretty reliable vehicle at this point. I've got about 60,000 miles on it now. I think I put 40 on it or 45 or 35,000 miles on this thing already. It just runs. No vehicle's perfect. These things are known to have a thing called the Hemi tick that can get them. But yeah, definitely don't restrict yourself to vans. Think about what you want to do and think about what will let you do it. And in my case, in my position, in my life right now, the thing most able to do that for me is this very truck. A big thank you to someone who donated 5 gallons to me this week so that there are no ads on this podcast. That's right, folks. This podcast has no ads because generous listeners like you visit buymeacoffee.com/built-to-go. That's 2 T's, not 3, not 1. And donate a gallon or 2 or 3 of whatever liquid you would like. Heck, it doesn't even have to be a liquid. You get to pick whatever it is. I don't care. Oh, it's just a silly thing. It's just money, of course. And that money takes the place of ads. So thank you to someone and everyone else who's donated and everyone especially who donates every single month. So again, that is buymeacoffee.com/built-to-go. And we will have no more ads. Van life news. So, some interesting and somewhat important stuff this week. This is the biggest news of the week, I think. I've been talking with the Discord folks about this a little bit. Starlink has changed how they do their plans now, and this happens a lot. Starlink changes their plans all the time. To be clear, if you're not familiar with this, Starlink is a satellite panel you put on your van. It's a little smaller than a pizza box, I guess. And it gives you really high-speed, excellent quality internet in your rig, no matter where you are. They're very common in the RV community. They're pretty common in the van life community. The only reason they're not more common in the van life community is that they're expensive, and generally you can't permanently mount them to your van, although that is changing. But a lot of folks who were in RVs had a problem because Starlink is expensive, $130, $150 a month, depending. And if you're an RV person, maybe you're only RVing 6 months a year, so you don't want to pay that every month. So Starlink had a plan where you could turn it off for a few months and then turn it back on, which was fine. But now they've gotten rid of that, and they've replaced it with something very, very interesting. They have changed it so that you can go to a $5 a month plan and still have internet. You get constant, unlimited, low-speed internet. Now, the thing here, which is kind of funny to me, is their definition of low speed is like T1 speeds. So if you're a child of the 60s and 70s, as I am, growing up with the internet in the 90s, well, I was fully grown, but you know what I mean. A T1 was the gold standard of internet. It was like, holy cow, he's got a T1, 1.5 kbps. Oh, well, that's how fast this thing goes. And that's fast enough to do things like watch Netflix on maybe low quality and, really important, to run security cameras. So that's very interesting. If you are a Starlink person, take a look at this, or if you've been considering Starlink, this kind of is a game changer. Now, Starlink changes things all the time. I don't know how long they're going to have this, but I am thinking about possibly switching what I have, which is a hotspot. I have an AT&T hotspot. I get 50 gigabytes of data a month, and that costs about $50 a month. That's not cheap either. But Starlink, if it can do $5 a month for like the months in the winter when I'm not down here in Tiki Bagelland very much, that's appealing. Blue Eddy also had a big announcement. Blue Eddy is the battery company famous for all-in-one units like Jackery or EcoFlow or Goal Zero or any of those. They have come out with, basically, they're advertising this as have a fully capable, powerful system in your van with only 30 minutes installation time. And it's not an all-in-one. It's a group of components that talk to each other and connect to each other very easily. Now, EcoFlow did something like this a few years ago, but this one kind of, you know, it ups the bar a little bit. So this is a 48-volt RV solar system. It can handle 5,000 watts of max AC output. So this is a beefy system. This is like, you know, a small house or apartment-sized system. And you can add 122 kilowatt hours of batteries, of LiFePO batteries. And what's new here is that Blue Eddy says you can use batteries that aren't in their system. So if you can find cheaper batteries, you can use them instead of the EcoFlow ones. This is pretty impressive. This is enough power to run basically anything you want. Air conditioning, you could even probably run heat, and you can charge it with as much solar as you can give it. So why 48 volts? Higher voltage is better for heavy draw things. Forget cars with their 12 volts and you can argue, oh, the starters are pretty heavy. Forget that. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about things like air conditioning, long-term high power devices. 48 volts is better because when you increase the volts, you lower the amps. That means thinner wires and ultimately it means less heat. So a 48-volt system, which is what most electric bicycles run on, some hybrid cars run on 48 volts, it's not an unheard-of voltage. It's better for very, very big systems. And then when you need to use your 12-volt water pump or your 12-volt LED lights or whatever, there's a component that steps that down. And yes, every time you step it down, you're losing a little bit of efficiency, but you have so much capacity, I don't think you care much about that. So this, if you're building a serious rig, something like this should be very appealing. As for the 30-minute install, it might take you 30 minutes to use a drill gun to drill the components into a piece of plywood, but obviously, your entire electrical build is going to take a lot longer than that. You got to mount the solar panels, you have to run outlets and all that. They're not including that part. Also, somebody pointed out that this thing can accept a massive amount of solar power, but they did the math, and if you max out the solar on this thing, you basically have solar panels the size of a pool table. And where is that going to go? You're going to like build wings or something. You're going to have a hard time actually giving it that much solar. Now you say, oh, we got portable panels, we put them out. Yeah, okay, that's all fine and true. But you're probably going to have to plug in every once in a while to charge the thing. So what's the price, you're asking? Yeah, they haven't announced that yet. But I imagine it'll be quite expensive. But I like this trend. You know, if these companies keep doing this where they make very simple high-power systems, that only benefits us. And they have a lovely picture here where they show a Victron system that does exactly the same thing as theirs. And the Victron system is a spaghetti tangle of wires with, geez, let me count, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 12 components, not counting the batteries. While theirs is only 3, and one of those is the control panel. So, link in the show notes. The article I linked is from TheVerge.com, but that's pretty darn cool. And finally, something that annoys me, but you may have come across it, so I want to talk about it a bit. Right now, currently, the Chrysler Pacifica is the largest minivan available in the U.S., and it could be a decent camping rig, especially the hybrid one. I have never seen anyone professionally build out a Pacifica as a camper van, as they have with the Metris and the NV200, and even some Ford Transit Connects I've seen professionally built out. I've never seen a Pacifica built out. So Chrysler did something a little unexpected. They released a prototype called the Chrysler Pacifica Grizzly Peak. If you know anything about grizzlies, they're not found on the peaks of mountains because there's nothing up there for them to eat. But anyway, we'll move past that. So this thing is an overlanding rig with beefy tires, and they've raised the body up so you get 7 inches of ground clearance. They have all-wheel drive built in, so that's counted for. And then, you know, this sounds great, and ooh, look, they've got some fancy badges, and ooh, a pretty paint job, and oh, and they put some lights up on the roof, and yeah, you know what? This thing is just a slightly raised Pacifica with a bunch of stickers on it. It's kind of like the Transit Trail. Nobody has built this thing thinking about how it will be used off-road. This thing is built to impress people at a trade show or an Overland Expo or something like that. It's got KO2 tires. Ooh, I mean, okay, wonderful. But there's nothing about this that is really anything you couldn't do with any Pacifica. It's just a lot of extra crap that doesn't really make it any more of a camper vehicle. I mean, some of the stuff they advertise as this coming with it comes with all-weather floor mats. Ooh. And Chrysler-branded stackable totes. Okay, then. Yes, that's valuable. In its back, and I love this, in back is a 115-volt, 450-watt outlet and a Mopar first aid kit. Now, a 450-watt inverter, which is what they're talking about there, it's pretty darn wimpy by most van life standards. And there's the one they show also has an awning that comes out the side. Again, you can do that with anything. Bottom line here is it's an interesting looking thing. Go ahead and have a look at it. I have a link from autoguide.com. But it's just fake. And when asked, the Chrysler rep said, "This is just a concept for now, but we could envision a toned down version of this Pacifica being available in the future." So, yeah, this is not the camper van of our dreams, the camper minivan of our dreams. This is just another trim line, and I'm going to use the word, yep, I think it's for posers. Tech Talk. Propane lockers are an important thing, and I don't see enough people using them. And so I have this problem now where I'm trying to build out this... Actually, I haven't done any work yet. I'm thinking about building out this space cap thing that I've got, this fiberglass cap that I just talked about. I want propane in there. People like it. People don't. I get it. I've made my decision. I want to have propane in there, okay? And I want to have a normal size bottle because I can swap them out at any hardware store just for convenience sake. Yes, I know it costs more to do that. I understand. Convenience is important to me. You do what matters to you. Problem is, I don't know how to build out a propane locker back there. In my ambulance, there was a cabinet that I kind of modified, and I put it in there. So I'm not entirely sure what I'm going to do in the space cap. But while I'm working on this, I thought I would talk about it in some depth here and explain why you want one of these things and how to make one. So a propane locker, it's called a locker because any thing on a ship that stores anything is called a locker. It doesn't necessarily have a lock on it. In fact, I would recommend you do not put a lock on it because you want people to be able to get at your propane in case something goes wrong. So it's a cabinet. The cabinet is airtight, or at least as airtight as possible. I put gaskets around the doors. I sealed up any holes, like where hoses came out and stuff. And the key thing is it has a drain, and the drain isn't for water. The drain is for propane or LPG or butane or whatever you want to call it, any kind of pressurized gas that you use in your van. All that stuff is heavier than air when it's in the form that it takes when it's in the bottle. LPG stands for liquefied, after all. So when it's in the bottle, it is heavy and it will sink. And so you're supposed to put a drain with a 1-inch diameter hole. And the idea here is that while a leak is still dangerous, it isn't going to build up in such a way that it's going to cause your van to explode, which is the problem. Let's say a mouse gets in there and chews the hose, and then your propane tank is leaking propane everywhere. That propane can't leave your cabinet very easily, but it will fall to the bottom and go out the drain and then leak out the bottom of your vehicle. This is not the greatest situation in the world, but it's much, much, much better than filling your van with gas. All these RV and van explosions you see are because the gas built up in the vehicle and then met an ignition source. Outside, if it does meet an ignition source, it's not going to be an explosion event. It's going to be maybe a fireball or a big woof, but that pressure, that energy isn't going to be captured into something where it builds up and then bursts, which is what an explosion is. So it is not safe to travel with propane just kind of sitting in the back of your rig. I know a lot of people do it. I might end up doing something similar to that. It is not safe. That is why you need a locker. And if you have any space in your build for propane, then I highly recommend you put it into a cabinet that has a drain to the outside and that is sealed off as much as possible. In my case, I stored all my flammable gases in there. Like, I also have butane, little canisters of butane that I travel with. I put them in there too. It's just a convenient place to store them. And then if anything happens, well, that's a better place for them to be. Now, I'll just jump ahead a little bit here. What I'm experimenting with is a bag. They sell these things that are basically tote bags for propane bottles. I bought one off Amazon. It just came yesterday. I'm going to try to make a little bit of a propane locker out of it. It won't be as good, but it will be better than just having the tank rolling around in the back of the truck. I would fasten it down. It wouldn't actually be rolling around. And with the new valves that will shut off if it detects a massive leak, I think my level of safety is going to be okay. But I'll let you know how that goes. Again, this is not as good as a dedicated locker. Or in the case of a truck camper, some people just mount them outside. Then, yes, you could have a problem with somebody stealing it, but you're in a lot safer position. One last note about this. A propane locker is not going to help at all if you have a leak at the terminus, like the stove or the refrigerator if you have an absorption fridge or your heater. If you have leaks there, gas is still going to build up in your vehicle. So it is important every so often, maybe once a week, once a month, go around with a bottle of soapy water and make sure that nothing is leaking out of any of your propane fittings. And if you ever smell unexplained gas, like I smell propane, figure out why. Every single time, right away. It might be nothing. Someone might have just turned on the stove and it didn't light for a while and some of the mercaptan scent got it. That's fine, as long as you have an explanation for it. If you have an unexplained smell, track that down, because your rig and your life depend on that being fixed. Product review. So this is a little odd product review, but I'm kind of taken by some things there, so I have to mention this. And I'm talking about Aldi, or Aldi, depending on how you want to pronounce that A-L word. I've lived all over the U.S., and some people say Al, some people say All. I grew up with All. I moved to Utah, they said Al, and... well, you doesn't have to call it Johnson. That's all I'm saying about that. So, Aldi is a very unusual supermarket. It is related to Trader Joe's through history and has some things in common with Trader Joe's in that they have their own brands and they don't sell too many quote-unquote normal brands there. But they're marketed and aimed very, very differently. Aldi is more of a full-service supermarket, but it is not a full-service supermarket. And it's very inexpensive. A lot of people go to Aldi and just do as much shopping as they can there because things, almost everything there is going to be cheaper than any big brand of supermarket. Walmart, maybe not, maybe so, depends on what it is. Now, their stuff's a little weird. You're not necessarily going to find what you're looking for. Like if you have a favorite brand of something, they're not going to have it. But if you just want staples, you're looking for some soup and some bread and some spaghetti and some steak and yogurt, yeah, they'll have all that. No, they may not have your favorite coconut raspberry rosin scented liquid yogurt drink, but they have food. And I think for folks in van life, a lot of times you're just looking for staples. They're perfect for that. They're a little strange in that they don't have shopping carts that are free. You have to put a quarter in a slot and take out the shopping cart, use it, and then when you put it back, you get your quarter back. And they don't have any free bags. Now, in Chicago now, that's normal. Nobody has free bags anymore. But in some of the more rural places, of course, you buy groceries, they give you bags to put your groceries in. Yeah, Aldi doesn't do that. In fact, the way they check out your groceries is weird. You roll the cart up, and you take the groceries out of the cart, put them on the conveyor belt, and then when they're scanned by the cashier, they don't have any place to put them. That area beyond the cashier where all the groceries go, they don't have that at Aldi. What they do is they put it in another shopping cart usually, and then you just basically swap carts, and then you take that cart full of loose groceries and go to a separate area of the store and bag them yourself. Little quirky stuff, but it's fine. The main reason, though, that I'm mentioning Aldi is they have this one aisle. And if you've been in there, you've probably seen this and you know what I'm talking about. It's a seasonal aisle and they sell weird stuff there. Like, okay, Thanksgiving and Christmas, so they'll have candles and, you know, maybe some big roasting pans, you know, stuff like that. They might sell some toys. But in the summer, they sell a lot of camping stuff and some of it is really decent quality for a low price and suitable for van life. A few things I've gotten there are a collapsible sink, like a temporary collapsible sink. I still have that. It was like $10. Very, very good quality for $10. A camping chair. Now, they have full-size camping chairs. The one I got was a little tiny one that, you know, it's one of those ones that has like 16 poles that are bungee corded together and then a piece of cloth that stretches over them. I've seen those for like $150. I got mine for $19, I believe, at Aldi. And this year, bargain of all bargains, they had butane stoves, you know, like those gas one, although they were, again, a weird brand. Those stoves, which I use all the time and love, $4.99. $4.99. Now, this was an end-of-the-season closeout, which is why I didn't tell everyone about it, because I bought them all. I literally bought every single one of them. All right, it was two. I bought two of them, because that's all they had. Because I don't know what I'm going to do with them. I now own at least three butane stoves, which is way more than I need. But for $4.99, I couldn't let them sit there. In retrospect, I probably should have let somebody else have them. But now I have them, and, well, anyway, they're mine. So if you're traveling around the country and you've never been to an Aldi or an Aldi, stop in and just be warned. It is an unusual experience. You basically go through the store once, aisle by aisle, in a this like a pattern you follow, and you get what you want, and you leave, and you've spent a lot less money than normal. Their produce is pretty good. Their meat is actually a really good value in my experience. Where they're weak is in frozen foods. Their frozen foods really don't do much for me. But, you know, hey, a lot of people doing van life don't do frozen food anyway. So it's Aldi, A-L-D-I. I think they're all over the U.S. now. I will also believe they're in Canada as well. And yes, they are related to Trader Joe's, but they are an entirely separate company. And that is a big, long, complicated story as to how Aldi and Trader Joe's are two different companies now. You can Google that for yourself. Tales from the Road. So if you look at the picture that is on the show notes for this week, and I'll describe it here, it's a picture of my van kind of sitting at Tiki Bago Land, which looks very woody this time of year. And then behind it is parked my truck. And the truck has the space cap in it, and the doors are open. And the doors are open in the back of the van as well. And what's going on in that picture is I'm getting ready to move everything out of the van and into the truck. What is not obvious in that picture is that after I took the picture, I got a little hitch in my throat and stopped. And I went back and locked up the van and just basically said, no, I'm not ready to do this yet. There's a weird emotional aspect, at least for me, and I'm sure some others, between me and the van. And not just this van. I mean, I still dream about my NV200. In fact, I still have dreams about a 1980 Datsun 510 that I used to own. I've had dreams about this car for years. Now, I haven't had this car since 1986 when it tragically got wrecked in a T-bone accident. But yeah, I still will dream about this car that many years. I mean, we're almost 40 years later. I'm still dreaming about that car. There's some emotional connection between me and vehicles. And again, that's not just me. I'm sure a lot of people have this. And this van definitely has that, because this is almost the van of my dreams in many ways. And of course, I spent countless hours in this van, building things out and figuring things out, etc. But this van, we're getting into some deep psychology here. This van was like an abusive lover. Oh, that sounds terrible. But what I mean is, and I'm sorry for those of you that this resonates with more than others, but this van did not treat me well. And it feels wrong even saying that, because I love this van. It's my van. But it did not treat me well. Every single major trip I took in this van, something went wrong. I joked that I couldn't take it on a major trip without the check engine light coming on. And after I made that joke, it happened on the next three trips. It's like clockwork. And this is one of the reasons I'm parting ways with this van, because even if I get it all fixed up, it's not going to be reliable. I'm not going to be able to trust it. And it's shown me that time and time again. So the van has to go. That's not in question. But there's still the emotions around the van. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go, as the parlance of the day is, ham on this van and tear everything out all in one fell swoop as much as I can. I'm going to store it in the garage, and then I'm going to install it in the cap. I'm not going to be meticulous about it. Because if I were meticulous about it, I would have more and more memories of, oh, I remember when I put that screw in. That's the second screw. The first one was too long and it wouldn't go in all the way. And then I cut myself. Oh, look, I still have a little scar for it. It would just be endless memories like that that will slow me down and get in the way of me getting what needs to be done. Doesn't this all sound silly? I mean, it's just a van. It's a piece of hardware. It's a vehicle. It's not that important, but this is how I'm wired, and I suspect a lot of us are wired this way. So, last weekend, I was in the Airstream getting ready to go back to Chicago and doing the dishes. No, there's no dishwasher in the Airstream. I am the dishwasher. And it's this kind of elaborate ritual where I've got limited counter space and this big round sink and everything. So, you know, it takes a bit of time. So I said, well, just for chuckles, since I'm thinking about the van, I'm going to use that Suno program, which is at sunoai.ai, and I'm going to have it write me a song about a van that is at the end of its life. And I just typed in a few little words, and then I said, make me a song like this, and whatever. So the way it works, at least for me, is when I do this, I don't do it very often, but every once in a while I'll have it make me a song, and it's completely AI. It generates lyrics and it generates the music and all of this, and then it just plays the song for you, and it does two different versions usually. And so I just hit play and I'm washing the dishes, and then like the lyrics, as silly as they were, started to really get to me, and I was getting really emotional about this poor van that was on the last mile of its life before it went off to rust in the sunset. And at that moment, my wife came in. She was out enjoying the birds on the river. And I lost it. Completely lost it. Barely able to talk, just weeping in the Airstream. And also laughing at the same time because of how ridiculous the situation was. And then she burst into tears, too, because she thinks there's something terribly wrong, like somebody died or something really bad happened, because she has not seen me like this so far as I know, at least not very often. No, it's just the stupid van. It's just the stupid van. It doesn't matter. So we had a sweet moment where we hugged each other and just cried over the loss of this van. That I'm looking at right now through the window. I'm actually in the Airstream right now, and I'm looking out at this thing, and it's hard. It's just hard, and yet it is dumb and meaningless, and it's just one of these life things. So if you have emotional feelings for your van, I totally understand. I know there are people out there who, like, don't understand this. They don't name their vehicles. They think that's silly. I understand. Everyone gets to do whatever they want. That's the point of van life. But for those of you who have an emotional attraction to your van, well, I get it. I absolutely get it. There are two books about what I call van life that I think are seminal books that everybody should read. Now, I'm an old guy and, you know, the world has moved on, etc. But those two books are Travels with Charlie by John Steinbeck and Blue Highways by William Least Heat Moon. There's an interesting difference between those books. William Least Heat Moon, the book is wonderful, and there's an interesting story about how the book was written and everything. His van is just a van. He doesn't talk about it like it's a person. I don't think he named it. His wording is like, and then I got in the van and drove off. It's just like a can opener. And then I use the can opener to open the can. Steinbeck, while he spends a lot of time talking about Charlie, who was the poodle that was his real emotional attachment, he actually did name the van. He named it Rocinante. which, if you know your Don Quixote, Rocinante is Don Quixote's horse. And Rocinante is kind of a proxy for Don Quixote in the novel. The horse is older, kind of awkward, he's past his prime, and he's engaged in this thing that is way beyond his capabilities. Don Quixote is famously tilting at windmills, and this poor horse is overloaded, going all these miles, and just can barely make it. And Steinbeck, obviously being a literary person, knew this, and he named his, it was a truck camper, basically. He named it Rocinante. And at one point in the book, he points out that he hasn't talked about Rocinante much. He always referred to it by name, but he didn't talk to it much. And the reason is, it never let him down. He never had a reason to talk about it. It always did everything he asked for. And so then he talked about it and how he felt about it and all the experiences he had in Rocinante. And I was like, that's it right there. I'm more of a Steinbeck than a William Least Heat Moon, although I'll never be anywhere near the writer either of them was. So if you are curious, at the end of this podcast, I'm going to have a slightly modified version of the AI song about the van that created this story that I'm telling you right now. I know everyone's got mixed feelings about AI. A lot of people absolutely hate it. Don't listen if you do not want to listen to any AI music. But if you're curious, it will be there right after the closing quote. A place to visit. So, we're in Mississippi now. Gibson, Mississippi. Right on the banks of the Mississippi River. There is a place. It's a little unusual. It looks like the Parthenon. It is a bunch of columns, all lined up in rows, just sitting there on the banks of the river. And what these are is the remnants of a plantation, and you can visit them. And though, from what I understand, there are some signs there saying, you know, don't go past this fence or whatever, everybody ignores it and they go in there, and you can take amazing pictures here because it's incongruous to see all this Greek stuff right on the Mississippi River in Mississippi. The story is kind of fascinating. So this was a classic antebellum mansion, plantation, lots of enslaved people, rich white guy, you know the story, you've seen it 1,000 times. And this guy made his living off of the backs of all these enslaved peoples and built himself this massive mansion. No, the enslaved people built him this massive mansion, and it was amazing. And in 1861, right on the day that the Civil War started, as I understand it, that might be lore, a mosquito bit him, and he got yellow fever and died. And that was the end of the plantation. While the family did end up living there for another 30 years or so, a house guest dropped a cigar, and the place burned to the ground. And the only thing left is all these columns, and because it was a Greek Revival structure, the columns look like the Parthenon. Now, what's interesting about these columns is that they're made of plaster-covered brick. They're not marble or wood. They're brick columns covered in plaster, and you can see through it in some places. And they were all constructed by the master masons who were enslaved people at the time. So, 1861, rich white guy, lots of enslaved people doing his bidding. 2025, columns built by those enslaved people. No white people. No plantation. None of the stuff that guy had anything to do with still exists. But the columns the enslaved people built are still there for you to see. And I think it's worth seeing. So I have a link in the show notes. It's on my bucket list. This is from Roadside America, which is a great source for these kind of things. And it's fairly easy to get to. This is not way off the beaten path. You just have to navigate that sign, however you're going to do that. Resource recommendation. I think stealth camping is real, and I've said many times that stealth camping isn't about being invisible, it's about being ignorable. And a gentleman by the name of Andy sent me an email just this morning, actually, although he's in Australia, so it might have been tomorrow depending on how you look at it. Actually, I can tell you, he sent the email 2 hours ago. So Andy sent me this email from the future. So thank you, Andy. And he said some very nice things about the podcast, which I appreciate. He's only up to episode 183, so there's a lot coming for him. But he lives in Perth in a 2015 Ford Transit Custom. And he was listening to something I said about stealth van life. He said it reminded him of Douglas Adams from The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy and the concept of the SEP field. SEP field being someone else's problem. If you don't stand out and you're not doing anything memorable, people's eyes will literally just glance off your van and won't even think about it. Yes. Yes, Andy. That is correct. That is my take on stealth. You have found the parallel perfectly. And I think stealth camping is going to become a lot more important because a lot of the places where we used to just park without worry are suddenly becoming legally problematic. Not only that, people are paying attention to this anti-homelessness movement, which is what we're caught up in, and kind of embracing it. I mean, not everybody, but there are people who like are now more suspicious of a van. Like, why is that van there? That van wasn't there yesterday. That kind of a thing. And then the phone call happens, and then the police come out, and, well, somebody called us, so we have to do something. You know, I think that's going to become more common, which makes stealth, especially this ignorability part of stealth, the someone else's problem field stealth, more important. So I thought I would just give you guys, if you're not familiar with the concepts and you want to get just the basics of stealth camping down, I found a link for you, and it is in the show notes, but it is from a website called beyondthebucketlist.co, and then it's vanlife-stealth-camping. Link in the show notes. But on this site, Gina, who I believe wrote the article, Gina and Evan travel around together in a conversion van. And a conversion van is a thing from the 80s and 90s. It's a big van with seats that is converted to be like a rolling living room. Not exactly a camper van, although they're commonly converted into a camper van. Their site, beyondthebucketlist.co, is in a way similar to Built2Go in that it's kind of a magazine format. They've got travel stories and recommendations and stuff. But what they also have is this stealth van life guide that they've created that is great for kind of dipping your toes into stealth camping and understanding what it is, because they look at stealth camping as a universal thing. It's not just for driving in the city. It's also for the wilderness as well. The whole point is to not be noticeable. If you're not noticeable, people won't bother you. And they talk about things like adding blackout curtains between the cabin and the living space, covering your windows, not having very many windows. If you're building out your rig, for example, my space cap, that I think that's what I'm going to call it, the space cap, doesn't have any windows in it, and I might not put any in. I have to think about that. I mean, windows are nice, but they're also a liability. They talk about in the city, like if you're in the city and you have one side of your van that's windowless, you want to face that side to the street so people walking down the sidewalk can't look in. And my favorite tip for self-camping, show up after dark and leave early. I really like the idea of roll in after 10 p.m., roll out before 6 a.m., and don't go back for a few days. That, I think, is going to avoid a lot of trouble for you. And there's a tip that I've never seen, but I like this. Look for signs about street cleaning. See if you can see about when street cleaning happens, and immediately after the street cleaning is done, park there. Because there won't be any other cars there, and the street cleaner's already done. So they have a lot of cool little tips here. It's a big old blog post. I don't know when this was published, but it seems like timeless information. So I definitely think it's worth a look. I have a link in the show notes, but the entire URL is beyondthebucketlist.co/vanlife-stealth-camping. Well worth a look. Great introduction to stealth camping. And I think my path in van life right now is going to lend itself to a whole lot more stealth camping. But we shall see. Well, folks, thank you very much for listening to this episode 272 of Built2Go. Music, as always, is by Simon Wagg, except for the AI music at the end, which is by who? I don't know. Me and a couple of AI things, I guess. Until next time, remember the words of Helen Keller, who said, what we have once enjoyed, we can never lose. All that we love deeply becomes a part of us.
Rust around your wheel wells, paint faded in the sun. 30 years of highways, now your traveling days are done. Remember Colorado mornings, coffee steaming in the cold. All those miles together, all the stories left untold. This is your last mile, old friend, down this winding country road. Every mile's a memory, every turn's a tale you've told. From the coast to desert sands, you carried all my dreams. Now you're heading to that place where old vans can finally sleep. Your motor's grown so weary, transmission slips and groans. You still smell like pine trees and the freedom I have known. We drew pictures on your walls, lovers sheltered in the rain. Every dance a chapter in a life, each a joy or pain. This is your last mile, old friend, down this winding country road. Every mile's a memory, every turn's a tale you've told. From the coast to desert sands, you carried all my dreams. Now you're heading to that place where old vans can finally sleep. I'll keep your spirit rolling in, and every sunset that I see, you taught me home's not just a place, home is being wild and free. Thank you for the miles, old friend, for every road that we have known. Though your journey's ending here, your spirit's found a way back home. Goodbye, my faithful wanderer, rest easy in the shade. But you still smell like pine trees and the freedom I have known. We drew pictures on your walls, lovers sheltered in the rain. Every dance a chapter in a life, each a joy or pain. I'll keep your spirit rolling in every sunset that I see. You taught me home's not just a place, home is being wild and free. Thank you for the miles, old friend,